Today's episode is brought to you by the NBA Store. A new year brings the start of a new NBA season, and this past week brought the formation of a new big three in Brooklyn. Javier, are the Nets the NWO?
James Harden is the third man. The Nets are the NWO. And let's be honest, Brooklyn is just going to take over the NBA for the next like year and a half before Sting shows up. Who's going to be Sting? The Boston
Giannis
Celtics.
Is going to be Sting.
The Boston Celtics are going to be Sting. They're going to come off the top rope, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. And we're taking the title, not this year because we're not good enough this year, but next year.
Whether or not you are cheering for the Sting Boston Celtics or the NWO Nets, the NBA Store can have you going in style. The NBA and Podgo are teaming up to bring listeners up to 75% off on selected items. Yes, you heard that right. 75% off. Go to podgo.co/NBA for up to 75% off selected items from the NBA Store. The NBA, where amazing and heel turns happen. Welcome to Crossbody of Work. My name is Evan.
I'm Javier.
And we love our technical difficulties. We really do.
Dude, it's a roller coaster ride.
It truly is. Every week. This week it was like, it's been like 40 minutes we've been trying to start this, so we're going to get it all done in one big take. That's the plan.
Yeah. You know, we are just vibing, but the people didn't come here for just the vibes. They came here for some wrestling. Evan, tell the people who we're covering this week.
AJ Lee, the original anti-diva?
I wouldn't say the original anti-diva, but definitely the one that will probably be most well-known for it in the modern era.
I would say the original anti-diva in terms of the fact that the diva term didn't exist. Like,
okay, because I was going to say, I mean, Lita literally existed.
Yeah, exactly. Lita is the predecessor. But in the diva era, it was definitely AJ Lee who was the first anti-diva. And then that crown was kind of taken by another woman who we'll see in this podcast in the last two matches. But yeah. We'll get to that when we get to that, because for now we're talking just about AJ Lee, whose career I really missed because this was in some of my lapsed fandom. What about you?
I basically missed her entire career. I stopped watching officially around like somewhere through 2012-ish. And then, you know, that was really her rise. And then, you know, obviously her as a Divas competitor really started around 2013. And that's when she went on her run. Through 2014, I came back at the end of 2014. I did see her lose the title to Nikki Bella, which we don't cover on this podcast, which is why I throw it out there.
Yeah.
And then obviously I remember the exact tail end of her run, which is kind of marred by injuries because she missed a whole lot of a while. And
she did miss a while.
Promptly, unceremoniously retired after the fact. So.
Yeah, we'll get to all of that on the pod, but before that, we're going to go through some housekeeping things. First off, make sure you're checking out Full Press Wrestling for all your wrestling coverage, fullpresswrestling.com. If you want to write for us, there's a link on the site as well. Follow the podcast on Twitter at Crossbody of Work. Usually just tweet random memes and retweet all the other things from the rest of the FPC boys and the podcast family. So check it out. Check us out there.
Yeah, occasionally I'll throw in a smart remark in replies or something.
That's true. Something sassy.
Yeah,
Javier, you know, is the sassy Southern Belle, if you didn't know.
I'm not Southern and I'm not a Belle, but I will take it.
These are the vibes people came for. Now, AJ Lee from New Jersey started wrestling in 2007 at the age of 20 and was trained by Jay Lethal. I feel like we've had a couple people in this show who have come through him and trained by Jay Lethal. So he's doing some extra work on top of his work for ROH.
Yeah, which is weird because Jay Lethal has always been pretty young. Like, I remember Jay Lethal's top run as the top guy of ROH a couple years back. I was just like, oh, how old is this guy? He's only like fucking 30 at the time. So it's like,
he's been around the business for a long time.
He's probably in his mid to late 30s right now. So it's not even like he's super old either. It's kind of crazy to think of Jay Lethal's impact compared to the amount of compared to his age, I should say. He's been around for forever, it feels like.
Let's talk about the fact that AJ Lee was signed to FCW and then joined this third season of NXT. So she was on Game Show NXT when it was paired with a pro. Her choice of pro or her pairing of pro is very strange.
So strange.
She's with Primo, you know.
Yeah.
Of like, the Shining Stars.
Of Carlito's brother.
Of Los Matadores.
Yeah, and no El Torito. Like, what is the point of this happening with no El Torito?
That's true. El Torito was the best part of that gimmick by a country mile.
Yeah, 100%. But, I mean, the NXT game show, I mean, I will say, I didn't mind the first season. I didn't hate it with Wade Barrett and all those guys. And I didn't mind the later season with, you know, Johnny Curtis, a.k.a. Fandango, and Derek Bateman, a.k.a. EC3. And, like, the cool little, like, love storyline they had going on with, I forget who it was, Maxine. And Maxine, who's Katrina in Lucha Underground and the whole stuff there. There was a wedding angle. It was actually, like, fun drama. But... yeah, no, this season two, I believe this was?
This was three. Season?
Season three, it was awful. It was so bad.
The top three of this season are excellent, though, because it's AJ Lee, Caitlyn, and Naomi. That's an excellent top three.
Yeah, I mean, it's either them, it's Oksana was also in that, who, yeah. God, she was so bad. She was really bad during her run, like when she was actually on the main roster and stuff. She was so much worse in this NXT show. It's, oh my God, it's just terrible.
And we're actually looking at a match from NXT, and it is Naomi versus AJ Lee. So Naomi and her pro Kelly Kelly versus AJ Lee with the aforementioned Primo. A match I had never heard of, never looked at, never saw, because obviously I wasn't watching during game show NXT. But this is one that came up on a couple of different Reddit threads of underrated AJ Lee matches. And what do you think about that assessment of this match?
I mean, this seems like a pretty basic match. I would kind of throw it more in the Naomi camp than I would the AJ Lee camp. But at the same time, I'm thinking about it. How many great AJ Lee matches are there? Like, there's only a handful because she didn't have any dancing partners.
We're going to talk about it eventually. She didn't have that many dancing partners. She also didn't have that much time and that much opportunity. We're going to get to that for sure.
I'll tell you, this was my favorite podcast to prep for.
Yeah, it was pretty quick to go through.
But no, this match was fine. I mean, it's kind of your... it's basically the match you get with that NXT show when you get two people who are actually kind of competent at wrestling. Like, Daniel Bryan had a couple of these during the first season of NXT where, you know, the matches were only like 4 or 5 minutes, maybe a little more than that if you were really, really good. But they were good matches. I mean, Daniel Bryan had a match with Chris Jericho that was really fun, you know? And if it's a good pairing out there, I mean, you can make a 5-minute match work, and these two did. I mean, it's clear that Naomi didn't have that much experience. She was definitely green around the edges, and it was clear that AJ, I mean, she was good. She was obviously the more experienced of the two. She's probably one of the already more experienced wrestlers in the entire women's division, but she just wasn't exactly fully crisped and, you know, honed as a worker
yet. She would get better with time.
Yeah, there were still a little mistake, you know, a couple mistakes here and there, but that's kind of what NXT was for. It was really to establish that these are new people coming onto the scene. And yeah, they may not be the best of the best, but they're rookies. They're not supposed to be.
It's wild that such a glorious thing like NXT Now came out of this shit show.
Let's bring back the game show.
Let's not bring back the game show.
Let's bring it back.
Unless it's
hosted
by R-Truth, then I'm cool.
I mean, who would... all right, let's say they do it the way they do it. How many pros were there? There were six, I believe?
I think so.
Who would you want to see as the pros?
As the pros? Oh, my goodness.
Because
you've
got to think, it has to be mid-card people who aren't used as frequently, but are also... I mean, I would say it's still pretty fine. Like, for my number one pick, Shinsuke Nakamura. Shinsuke Nakamura. Well, I mean, I'm also kind of thinking the entertainment factor. Can you imagine Shinsuke?
Use the Artist Collective more as, I think, what we're going at.
Yeah, give me Sami Zayn as well. Give me people. I mean, I feel like Xavier Woods is going to be thrown in there because he's a personality, but...
give me Ciampa. He's not doing anything after Fight Pit.
Hey, he's going to be a tag team with Timothy Thatcher.
You think so?
I know so. They literally teased it last night. He goes, hey, there's an open spot in the Dusty Classic.
That's true.
Then Thatcher just like smiled, shook his head, and walked away.
So let's talk about the match and the fact that it is called by heel era Michael Cole, aka the worst fucking thing that has ever existed.
No, because the worst fucking thing that's ever existed is right next to him, Josh Matthews.
No, that's true. Yeah, this is bad commentary. Watch this match on mute, and you will have a much better time.
It's not the worst. All right, Michael Cole isn't the worst in this specific match.
He's not being
the worst.
A heel.
It's all right. You're not fully understanding what I'm saying. It's not the worst.
What's the? Because it's because Josh Matthews is there.
Josh Matthews fucking exists. And the, honestly, Mike, the reason why I was okay with this was because Michael Cole, while annoying as fuck, was kind of drowning him out. So I didn't have to hear as much Josh Matthews. And I'm kind of just used to Cole's head. I just mute it internally anyways.
That's true. So early on in the match, some good spots that I liked. There was a really quick spot where the head scissors by AJ, and then Naomi follows it up with what is now known as the rear view, but I guess wasn't a finisher at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's it makes a lot of sense. You know, I didn't know any of their finishers at this time. So, I honestly, I'm thinking back to it. I didn't know what Naomi's finisher was before she was, like, the glow person.
Fair.
I really
she
didn't.
Never really gotten any times to hit it.
She never really won. And she was rarely ever used, but even when she rarely ever won.
Before we go more into the match, is Naomi the most underappreciated women's wrestler of the last, like, decade? She's up there.
All right, are we talking underappreciation as in, like, wasn't used as much, or underappreciation as far as, like, people who actually, you know, appreciate this person? Because I think it's Natalya.
I think Natalya's
excellent. Natalya's one of the, in my opinion, one of the 3-4 best women's wrestlers of all time. And she is just there.
People just write her off constantly. I think Naomi is underappreciating the fact of, like, she always showed great spots. Like, she always had the ability to hit her spots. She's even really good in this match where she's green, so she's a rookie. But they took so long to pull the trigger on giving her anything.
She was a victim of circumstance as far as, like, the whole Divas thing. But she was also been, in the last, like, 4 or 5 years, she's kind of been a victim of, we have other people that are better kind of deal. I mean, I know there's a lot, you know, there's obviously the Charlotte, the Beckys, the Sashas, they've been pushed to the forefront. But, I mean, you kind of think about it, where is she going to fall in with the main event picture, especially, like, you know, coming up? I mean, you have Rhea Ripley soon to be coming up, probably. You've got a lot of women in NXT that are going to eventually transition over to the main roster. Naomi's just going to fall even deeper into the pecking order. And, yeah, she's insanely talented, but would you rather start your division with Naomi or Rhea Ripley? Or, like, Naomi or Bayley? Or
for everything Naomi can do. Naomi was one of the stars of, was it the last Rumble or was it the Rumble before, where Naomi had, like...
Yeah, she's their Kofi. You know, she does the Kofi spot.
But still, like, you can give her more. I don't know. I think she's being underused. But
I mean, I think the women in general are being underused.
Agreed.
But that's agreed. A WWE issue.
That's a Vince issue. What's the spot you liked?
Yeah, I mean, I love that head scissors spot that you were talking about because it looked really, really good. There was a couple of tilt-a-whirl spots in this match that actually looked really good. I don't know why my good sounded that way. Good.
Good.
But, yeah, you know, it's obvious. It was really, really obvious within the first, like, minute and a half that AJ was just going to have to be the person that carries this match. Because you could tell in a couple of the way that the slams were happening and in the way they were hitting the ropes, Naomi is still very green.
Mm-hmm.
But there is obviously talent there. I mean, you know, she hits a scoop slam at one point and does a high jumping, like, leg drop where she gets pretty good air on it. I thought that was really good. There's a bow and arrow submission that she clearly didn't know, like, placement and stuff in the ring. She was way too close to the ropes and
she her, had shoulders her shoulders were down. Yeah,
and, you know, it's a thing that happens with when you're just green.
You're learning,
I mean, she's new to the business. She was a dancer. She has no wrestling background pre-WWE. There was a fun spinning counter. Like, she does a tilt-a-whirl counter into a DDT, like a tornado DDT, which was really cool. And, I mean, it almost from there, it kind of just goes straight into the finish.
Yeah, because AJ manages to lock on the octopus, because at this point it says the octopus stretch. She just hasn't called it the Black Widow. Is that what she calls it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Cole has one of the worst calls ever.
Octopus!
Just yells octopus like 14 times.
Super loud.
You would think that it was him calling Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 30.
The Miracle Kid!
That actually worked. That was right for the moment. This is a random 5-minute match on NXT.
Well, it was also after he had won.
Exactly. Stop just screaming octopus.
He was screaming it out while the move was applied before Naomi could even tap out.
So AJ gets the win. In, you're right, like, a good match for rookies on NXT, and I think you can see sparks of greatness in both of them. but definitely
AJ. Yeah, and I could see why people wanted to pick out this match. It was two really talented women's wrestlers in the very early stages of their development. I mean,
yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's a cool little gem for AJ because, I mean, before 2012-ish, which we will get to right now, you don't really see her much. There's not much AJ Lee out there.
And AJ Lee would actually be eliminated on this show, later in this episode. AJ Lee was eliminated and came third overall in that season behind Caitlin and Naomi.
Boo.
Let's move on to the second match, and it's not really a match that AJ participates in, but it's one of the most, I'd say it is the most famous angle that AJ is a part of. These are the people she is most associated with.
This storyline did not age well.
No, it's very weird. Let's talk about it. So the match itself is AJ Lee and now husband CM Punk versus Kane and Daniel Bryan on Raw June 11th, 2012.
Pre-Team Hell No, everybody.
This is actually what leads into Team Hell No. So AJ had been in a romantic angle with Daniel Bryan when he was a shithead heel. And the fact that he gave her a good luck kiss is partly to blame for what preceded Bryan losing in 18 seconds at WrestleMania 28. Sadness.
Not partly, it completely.
I mean, you can blame Bryan or you can blame AJ, but they both were there, and Bryan lost in 18 seconds. AJ was then given a mentally unstable aspect to her character, which truly did not age well.
Especially considering her.
Yeah, it's not
the
great.
Human being.
Yep. She snapped after losing Bryan, turned her affection on to CM Punk and Kane, who were both kind of feuding with Bryan, and was firmly in the middle of the Punk-Bryan feud. Like I said, this is also the pre-Team Hell No. It was actually this teaming together that would lead to Bryan and Kane becoming a full-time tag team and becoming tag team champions later.
And this match is on the eve of a triple threat match that they're going to have at Over the Limit, I believe?
Yes.
It's a triple threat match, Punk, Kane, and Bryan, which is basically what leads to Team Hell No.
Yep. And it's very weird. AJ's gimmick is that you can never predict what she's going to do. She, like, snapped on, I think Caitlyn was her friend, and she snapped on her and beat her up. And, like, it's not very well portrayed, but when does WWE ever use a light touch?
She has kissed CM Punk. She has kissed Daniel Bryan.
And we're going to get to Kane.
Let's just put it like this, everybody. CM Punk comes out, and my only note is, you're WWE champion.
We haven't seen WWE champion Punk on this podcast before, and I would just like to say, he fucking rules.
This guy is like, he is about 5 months, 6 months into his title reign at this point.
Yeah, a little longer.
Yeah, a little longer than that. It is fucking insane to me what they did to him during the first half of his run.
Yep.
Like, up through until, like, SummerSlam era, it is just disgrace. I mean, he obviously had the really, really great match against Daniel Bryan. He had the fun kind of-ish program with Chris Jericho leading into WrestleMania. But aside from that, it was just dud.
And then they also, because next summer is Summer of Punk. And they drop the ball there, too, because they bring in friggin' Kevin Nash and...
No, that was pre this.
I thought that was in...
That was 11.
Oh, that's 11. I'm mixing up my 11 and my 13.
This is post. No, 2013 is Heel Punk, Paul Heyman.
Right, Heel Punk. Yeah, so everyone talks about, like, the great title reigns. You need to have quality opponents, which is why I will always defend people who say the Kofi Kingston's WWE Championship run wasn't great.
It was awesome. What are you talking about?
Some people fight and say, like, oh, he wasn't great. I'm like, he did excellent. No. And also, he was doing well against guys like Ziggler, who's been around for 1,000 years.
Okay, I mean, he had a program with Samoa Joe, but...
Man, like, I don't know.
I thought it was great. He was put over strong over a lot of great opponents. I mean, Randy Orton and Samoa Joe. It ended terribly, but I thought, I mean, he was made to look like the biggest, baddest guy in the roster, which is what you want out of your heel. Out of your champion.
I just gotta stop listening to people on Twitter. Anywho,
yes,
let's talk about the match itself. Obviously, Punk and Bryan start. AJ Lee is terrified and is sitting on the apron because she doesn't want to be in.
No,
the
Punk and
match.
Kane start.
Punk and Kane start, and then Bryan comes in pretty early.
Yeah, they just start doing the double team thing. Bryan comes in. He was an annoying heel. It was amazing. He just starts throwing kicks. He's yelling yes. This was pre-Yes Champion popular. He kind of just did it to annoy people.
Yeah.
And which is funny because he does it to annoy people, but the people are just like, yeah, we like this guy now.
Wrestling fans are weird.
It's great. It's fun to see Daniel Bryan try to heal it up during the early stages of the Yes Movement, because people are just like, we want to root for you, dude.
Yeah.
He's being worked on. CM Punk is being worked on badly by Bryan and Kane, and he reaches over for a tag at one point, and he has a clean tag to AJ, but then he realizes that his partner is AJ Lee, and he's just like, well, I guess I'll just continue getting my ass kicked.
The look on Punk's face when he turns and sees that he remembers that AJ is his tag partner, he kind of is like, oh, and just kind of like lowers his head a little bit, like, all right, I got to keep fighting Kane.
Yeah, cool. And Kane just throws him into the corner, and AJ accidentally tags herself in.
And Kane wants to fight AJ immediately when this happens. He is ready to throw hands with this small lady.
Yeah, he is just staring down at her, like, with a death stare. She's just looking up to him kind of lovingly, and then she starts smiling at Kane. She starts skipping in circles around him.
Tori starts, he starts getting Tori flashbacks from the Attitude Era.
And then eventually she just stops behind him. He turns around like, what the fuck? And then she just jumps up onto into his arms, wraps her legs around his waist, and just plants one on him.
Hello, Mr. Mayor.
And it's like a solid 15-20 second kiss.
You remember those ninth graders who had never dated anyone before, and they're like going at it in the hallway between class? It's those kids.
Just, oh, you mean my...
It's Kane and AJ Lee.
It was my friends in the hallway right near my locker. But anyways...
I don't understand what it is about ninth graders. If anyone is going into high school soon, if anyone's a young listener, one, sorry, we make a lot of references you don't understand. But also, if you're in the ninth grade, I have one piece of advice. Move to the side of the hallways. Get the fuck out of the way.
Yeah, go up against your locker, but not my locker. Your locker, the locker that is yours with all your stuff in it. Yeah, if you just close it or leave it open, whatever you want, you can go in there. But like,
ninth graders move in packs like gazelles. I don't understand.
Yeah, and just fuck off.
Just move. It's okay. You'll have your chance to shine soon. Just stay out of the way, and you won't get run over by any 12th graders.
Yeah, you're a freshman. We don't care about you.
That's me. We care about you, but we just don't want to have to run you over constantly. Anyway,
exactly.
So Kane is befuddled at his newfound boo, tags in Bryan.
Yeah, and forces a tag on Bryan.
Yeah, and AJ tags in Punk. And pretty quickly we get to the end.
Kane leaves. Kane tags Bryan and dips.
Kane walks up the ramp. Kane's like fuck this. I need to go think about what I've done. I also need to change my pants.
And so. It's just weird. So AJ tags Punk in. He hits a backup on Bryan to stop his momentum. He falls down. And then Punk hits a flying elbow, the Macho Man elbow that looks terrible that he loved doing. And that's what he wins the match with.
That's the end. It's not an important match in terms of like AJ putting on a wrestling clinic. We're going to get to some for better wrestling matches soon. But yeah. This is, I think, the most important feud of AJ's career.
Yeah, it's what everyone remembers her for. It's this. It's the Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, Kane, John Cena thrown into the mix at some points there.
She was going to marry Daniel Bryan on Raw 1000, but dumped him to be Raw GM.
Yeah, she becomes Raw GM, which I've looked back on. She's really good in the role.
That doesn't surprise me. She seems like a good actress.
Yeah, she was really good in that spot. And honestly, I mean, you think about the career that she's had and, you know, her... allegiances. It's been guys like Daniel Bryan. She's been in programs with CM Punk, who was champion at the time. John Cena, who is obviously the top guy in the company. Kane, who is a legend in the business. You know, eventually down the line, she goes with Dolph Ziggler when he's at the hottest point of his career.
Oh man, I loved that era of Dolph Ziggler.
You know, it's Big E, who we'll talk about in a second. And then it really transitions eventually to just her being the top diva for like a year and a half, which is kind of insane. It's kind of a crazy run once you think about it in, you know, totality.
The way that she kind of parlayed everything into the next big thing.
Yeah.
And she did it well. And we're going to talk about, you know, really the best era of her wrestling starting after the next commercial break. So we're going to take this quick break. When we get back, we're looking at a match versus Caitlyn. Back from the break, and we're looking at a match against Caitlyn, Payback 2013. This is for the Divas Championship. Caitlyn is the Divas Champion. Now, in the interim, in the time since, AJ teamed with Dolph Ziggler, or started teaming with Dolph Ziggler, after turning on John Cena at TLC December 2012. And then Ziggler and AJ added Big E Langston up from NXT.
Big chest meat.
Big titty meat. That's Big E. That's my boy. I love him. If you want a good read before the Royal Rumble, go to fullpresswrestling.com and check out my article on why Big E should win the Royal Rumble, because he should.
My Daniel Bryan one is pending, people.
So AJ won the right to challenge for real-life friend Caitlyn's Diva Championship by winning a Battle Royal in early April. Then came the secret admirer. Lee set up Caitlyn to believe that she had a secret admirer, and it was revealed to be Big E. But then when Big E came out, looking smooth as all hell, I will say. With the silk shirt.
Oh.
Big E is, what a stud. Big E's a fucking stud.
He's a gem. Any woman that would be with Big E Langston is a lucky woman.
Big E looked so smooth with Secret Admirer, and he like woos Caitlyn and like dips her, like he's going to kiss her, and then just drops her on the ground, and AJ comes out. And is so mean. She's so mean to Caitlyn. No one will ever love you. Like, these are...
What a promo, though.
These are things that cut fucking deep.
Like, honestly, I know this is just kind of like a storyline thing, but even I kind of was at the point where I was like, all right.
I felt so bad for Caitlyn.
I was just like, all right, Caitlyn, beat this hoe up.
Yeah, whoop her ass. Like, way to, you know, sell the investment, but like, wow, it was so high school. But it was so mean.
I love that high school shit. We were just talking about One Tree Hill prior to the recording of this podcast, which is my number one favorite show of all time. I know everything about that show. And, you know, it's kind of just that admission should just show people I love that high school drama shit.
During the entrances, Caitlyn makes her entrance, and the aesthetic of Caitlyn, the Divas Championship, and the Payback logo, it all felt very 2013.
Like, so 2013.
It was such a like time capsule. Like,
you want to hear the most 2013 thing possible, though? The main event is John Cena and Ryback in the Three Stages of Hell match.
Oh, yeah. Right. What a weird time.
We are just skipping right through that one.
Yeah, we're going to just skirt on past that. Yeah, definitely. Also, we haven't talked about the Divas title. What a shitty looking title.
So when I think of the Divas title, I do think of AJ Lee. I will unfortunately say that belt alone. I mean, it's most well known because of her super long title reign. You know, she really held it for a long time. Didn't get to defend it as much because, you know, the division
didn't
sucked.
Get the opportunities. Yeah,
but like, yeah, you know, it's unfortunately the title that I remember most with her. Even though she strikes me as, like, the least diva out there.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that that's the one you associate with the belt.
Yeah, because in real life, AJ's just, like, the nerdiest not diva person out there. She, like, writes comic books now, for fuck's sake. Like,
it really doesn't gel with the aesthetic of the Divas title. Also, making the top championship prize of the women's division look more like an accessory than a prize really shows you what WWE thought of the women's division at that time. Like, it truly was not seen in the same light.
Yeah, I will say, though, with the belt, it looked like fucking perfect on Maryse. Like, it so just worked with Maryse. And Natty, too, when Natty had it. Like, just because Natty has, like, the bodysuit with the pink on it, and it just actually, like, really looked good.
So,
aesthetically pleasing.
Looking at the match, it starts so hot. Also, Big E is out with AJ Lee, and he's in his singlet. I assume he had a match.
I think he did. I think him and Dolph had a match together.
I don't know why he would be wearing his singlet. Anyways.
Well, they had their tag team deal, too, him and Dolph.
And Caitlyn is using the fury quick. Like, she tosses AJ over the Spanish announce table.
Yeah.
As she should. She should be fucking furious. And she was. And that was a big theme of this match.
Yeah, and as it fucking should be. You got a hot feud. Start hot. You know? Although it slows down super fucking quick. Because AJ gets on top at one point. She hits a basement drop kick.
While
but it was off
the apron.
Which
was really cool. I like that.
So she just hit her in the face.
Yeah.
And then from there, she's on top. She gets, she puts on a couple cravat holds. She gets a couple headlocks on. So many rest spots, like yeah, right at the beginning.
AJ, it was a lot of AJ trying to wear Caitlyn down because Caitlyn obviously has the power advantage.
Yeah, and she's got the speed advantage. She's got all the advantages. Caitlyn was really fun. Like, I really, there was a, looking back on the 2013 and stuff, like, there were a lot of Caitlyn spots that I really like. Like, she had a really good spear.
Oh, you know, yeah, she, we're gonna get to that.
She, like, could really muscle people, and honestly, like, if she had just kept to it and just kept going, I feel like, you know, I would fucking kill to have seen her against Charlotte in matches. Her against Rhea Ripley. Like, can you just imagine, like, we saw a really fun, like, I would say Haas woman fight, even though they're both, like, my height, between Rhea Ripley and Raquel Gonzalez. That was a really, really fun match. Can you imagine if we had gotten that style of match between, like, Charlotte and Caitlyn?
That would have been really cool.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not that she's the best worker in the world, because she's not. She's had her flaws, obviously, but give her a little refinement. Maybe send her down to NXT for a couple of while. You know, it would have been really cool. But, yeah, back to the match. AJ gets a really... All right, so there's a great shoulder tackle by Caitlyn at one point where she just rebounds off the opposite rope. Runs
over AJ.
Yeah, but AJ just puts on the shittiest crucifix pin I've seen in a long time.
And then Caitlyn rolls through it. This is the one that she rolls through, right?
Yeah, she rolls through it. She gets AJ up on her shoulders, and then she tosses her forward into the knees, like to her abs. Gutbuster.
Yeah.
Yeah, gutbuster.
She whips AJ's belt off of her, which elicits, like... It's just a belt, and listen. Yeah, it's just a belt.
Her pants didn't move in any way, shape, or form.
Some people in the crowd were ahead of themselves. First of all, off AJ, and AJ runs to the apron while the ref is distracted because I believe because she is pulling
AJ
the apron back.
AJ fucked around with the apron.
AJ yeah. pulled the apron, and she's going to pull back in the ring. As the ref goes to fix the apron, AJ hits her with the belt that she just had taken off of her. Yeah. And then pretends to be down too, Eddie Guerrero style. You love to see
it. But she's down a little too long.
Yeah, she's down for a long time.
Because, you know, she goes, she gets the pin on, and it's a near fall.
Lee then so snaps and screams, again tying into her presentation that we mentioned before. There's a top rope crossbody. And Caitlyn catches her, because of course she does. AJ's tiny.
Yeah, AJ's not big woman.
I felt it did nothing for Caitlyn to catch.
She's all of like 5'2".
Thing in the world. Yeah, and Caitlyn goes to like swing her around, and AJ then catches her in the Black Widow instead, which looked really
I love
good.
Those counters though. She's so good at tilt-a-whirl countering into the Black Widow.
Yeah, Caitlyn powers out into a backbreaker, and then this is where we see the massive spear.
No, it's not a backbreaker. It was a sidewalk slam.
Okay. Oh man. Oh, sorry. Move, please.
We don't disrespect sidewalk slams. I fucking love sidewalk slams.
We get a massive spear. People should so take good. Notes. And AJ, this match, I will say, excellent selling throughout.
Like, yeah.
She can ragdoll. Like, you know, she clearly learned some things from Dolph on the road.
Oh, my God. Dude, she sold that just like Dolph Ziggler.
But she also does a good job of selling with her facial reactions. And not the classic... WWE, like, you know, you get a two count and you look incredulous like no one's ever kicked out of a move before, but just the facial expressions of like being in agony, like you can see that she's thinking of what to do, like you can see she never loses herself, like she's always in the match, she's always clearly in character in the match, and I like that a lot,
and really good at just selling acting like she's dead. So good at
that too.
She's so good at it. But yeah, there's it's fucking hilarious. So she hits the spear, which I believe is Caitlyn's finisher.
I think so.
There was like a spot where she like transitioned to a different finisher. I don't know if that had happened yet, but she hits the spear, and then she just kind of teases AJ. She blows a kiss in her face. She lifts her up, and then she's just like slams her back down and goes for a pin. She picks up her head, and then she slams her head back down. She doesn't actually pick up AJ. She goes for the pin, and AJ kicks out because she fucking waited like 30 seconds before actually pinning the woman. So.
Took her a long time, and commentary rightfully is like, hey, you could have won if you just didn't do that.
This woman was dead 35 seconds ago.
So she kicks out. AJ then dodges another Caitlyn spear, and she goes crashing and goes head first into the turnbuckle.
Yes.
Then we get the Black Widow locked in once more, and she taps out. I do love the fact that the mind games that AJ was playing clearly played a role in Caitlyn's demise.
Yeah, like, she was AJ just too hot.
Under her skin.
She was going. She was flying too high, baby. The sun melted her.
And so AJ becomes Divas Champion. This is her first reign, and it is her longest reign, and is the second longest reign in history. We'll get to that.
What is it, 289?
It is, I have written down here, 295.
295.
Yeah. But now we're looking at the AJ Lee promo, which is affectionately called the hashtag pipe bomb shell.
I love this so much, but they messed. They took out my favorite part of it.
What was your favorite part? What did they take out?
We will get to it at the end.
Okay. I didn't realize there was a part that was missing.
The most famous line of it.
AJ was the perfect anti-diva for the time. Absolutely. Yeah. She's still Divas Champion. And she comes out to cut a promo. All of the Total Divas women are out there at the ring. So Eva Marie is out there with the Bellas. Natalia's with the Funkadactyls in the ring. And JoJo is the ring announcer. So all the Total Divas women from that season are there.
My favorite thing was, like, so she starts off and she's talking about Total Divas and she's like, oh my God. She's like fake fangirling. And she gives us the line. Bellas were dealing with their obvious daddy issues. The Funkadactyls broke up and then got back together again. Natalia's husband isn't much of a man.
You be nice to Tyson, kid.
Oh, and the other two were also there.
Yeah, that was mean. That's so mean. They're doing things.
They were just there. It's just terrible. Like, my least favorite part of all of this was just Nikki and Brie just yelling in the background.
Say it to my face.
Say it. No, it's say it to our face. Oh, they say they continuously just say it to our face. It's like, all right, first off, proper grammar, please. Second off, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, it was pretty annoying because the ringside mics were picking it up really hard. AJ's fake scream after shilling how good the show is. She's like, oh my God. Is very funny.
It's so good. She's really good at mocking.
AJ is...
She's been spending too much time with Punk.
AJ is a very funny person.
She really is.
From what you can see in interviews and what you can see in kind of her character work, she's very funny.
She's hilarious. And it, like, you can tell here, she's been getting some pointers from Punk because this is a very CM Punk-esque type of promo.
AJ says, you know what I see when I look in that ring? A bunch of cheap, interchangeable, useless women. Like, this is not women building up women. This is AJ calling out an entire division.
Because
this was a majority of the division at this time. Like, this is really the foundation of the division.
And she calls them out all basically bunched up together when she goes, I didn't get here because I was cute or came from a famous wrestling family or because I sucked up to the right people.
Oh, I wonder what she means by that.
And, you know, she just basically buries everyone. She just goes, "They're not on my you're not on my level. You can step up and you'll get put down." Like, she basically is just saying, "Hey, bitches, I'm fucking the best here. Yeah. There's your reality check, reality TV.
You will never be able to lace up my Chuck Taylors."
Yeah.
Which sounds like something that, like, some of the people I knew in middle school would have said. But the way that she delivers it actually lands. The arrogance, the absolute arrogance that AJ is displaying here, but it's all based in truth and reality.
You know, now I actually try to remember the line. I don't know if it's actually a part of this. It's when she goes, someone needs to tell the Bellas that talent isn't sexually transmitted.
No, that's from another promo.
Yeah, because she was in the ring, I believe, when she said that.
But the way that she ends up...
Another great line, though.
And that is reality. Great line. Great line by AJ. I love the whole idea of AJ versus the division, but I always find, like, it's a really hard line to walk whenever you kind of position one person against a large group like that, because it's hard for that person to continuously dominate. Like, they made it work, obviously, and we'll talk about how AJ does end up losing the title, but it was kind of weird that, you know, she just kind of comes out, just demos the division and is like, none of you can hang with me. Because then how do you book AJ to have competitive matches after that?
It does, however, like, I mean, I think you could do it. You put her in program with Natalia, than just have her, like, to have him go out there, give him fucking time.
Natty's reliable. You can just
give them time. Why didn't she have, like, a 10-15 minute match with Natalya at some pay-per-view? Didn't have to be an A-list pay-per-view. It could have been some D-list pay-per-view for all I care. Just give her time.
Fatal four-way.
Have a competitive match. Let AJ show out. Let Natty show out. Just
That's a conversation I don't think we've had before. What do you think about all the gimmick name WWE pay-per-views?
Oh, for fuck's sake. That's a topic
I just want to get you mad. I just want to get you
pissed off. I'm not diluting the podcast with that talk. That's going to last about 50 minutes.
You don't want to talk about how Hell in a Cells always have to happen in October because that's when they apparently get the cell out of storage?
So that promo happens, and Evan, take us to commercial, please.
I will take us to commercial. When we get back, we're looking at two more AJ Lee matches. Back from the break, and now we're looking not at the match that ends AJ Lee's legendary Divas Championship reign.
Yeah, that's being reserved for a different podcast.
But the feud that comes out of it. So Paige debuted, the other anti-Diva that we kind of talked about earlier. Paige debuted the night after WrestleMania 30 on Raw and beat AJ Lee for the title and ended her reign at 295 days, the longest at the time.
Fantastic debut.
So AJ would go away for a little and come back on June 30th and would actually beat Paige for the title again on Raw in her first night back.
In a roll-up.
In a roll-up. Because low Raw. Yeah, that is it's the Raw way. And I guess Paige and AJ had been kind of like quasi-friends for a little. Where
it was weird.
As a face, and Paige was still a face, and they hadn't really decided who was going to be the heel. But then I guess Paige turns heel on AJ. I think Paige is the heel here.
They kind of just flip-flop the whole way through. If I'm being completely honest.
It's like
honest.
Pick your poison who you actually want to cheer for and against.
Yeah, I don't think either of them are actually the heel. I also don't think either of them are actually the face. It was weird. They were frenemies. It's honestly just such a weird...
They use that line a lot on commentary, actually, is that they were frenemies.
Yeah, it's generally such a weird storyline because, I mean, it kind of just abruptly ends and then the Bellas come in and then it's just terrible. But anyways...
Sadness. Pain.
Yeah, we start off with Paige coming down. She's skipping down to the ring. It's just great. I love this. Also, this is SummerSlam 2014. John Cena gets murdered.
I remember the murder of John Cena because this is, you know, I was fully back in at this point.
I wasn't. I didn't come back in until Survivor Series.
The first pay-per-view that I had watched was the Royal Rumble before WrestleMania 30. So this is right when I had gone back. And, yeah, I know. And, we don't want to talk about that. The thing that I remember was I'm like, oh man, John Cena and Brock Lesnar, that's going to be crazy. And then he, like, got...
It was crazy.
Just murdered. It was the birth of Suplex City, bitch.
It was definitely crazy, I'll tell you that.
I don't understand people who would buy city-specific Suplex City shirts, because I don't...
I'd pull it out, but it's at the bottom of the pile over there.
You have one?
I have a Boston one.
No. Why?
I went to the SmackDown before WrestleMania 32, I believe. The one where he fought Dean Ambrose.
Ambrose? Yeah, it's 32.
Yeah, 32. And I was in Boston, and I saw the shirt, and I was like, I'm just going to buy it.
Man, buy a different shirt.
No, fuck you. It's a great shirt. And it's Suplex City, Boston, Massachusetts, motherfucker. There's no North Bay one.
My city will never make it on a Suplex City shirt, so I'm just bitter. That's all.
You're bitter? Anyways. Be better. How about that?
Be better. So, to start the match, weird start, I would say, because early on, AJ bites Paige?
Yeah, like, Paige sticks out her hand like this is fucking Ring of Honor. Like, we have to adhere to the code of honor. And then AJ just bites it.
What would be in a WWE code of honor? Nothing.
No, it's just a handshake. Or it's like UFC where you just fucking touch gloves or something. I don't know. Unless you're Stone Cold Steve Austin, in which your code of honor is, hey, here's a fucking middle finger.
Flip off your opponent, yeah.
I don't know.
So AJ bites Paige's hand to start, which again makes me think like, okay, AJ's the heel, but Paige had heelish like tendencies when she was skipping out here. It was very weird.
This is also like, you got to think about it. That whole sequence is just so anti 2020, 2021 because like, who the fuck shakes hands now? There's a fucking pandemic, people.
That's true.
And also, we're biting hands? Transmission of germs?
I do get when I'm watching like TV shows that were clearly like that don't involve the pandemic, and I'm like, you people are way too close together.
Dude, I watched Live Aid, the Queen performance, because Queen is my favorite band of all time, and I just watch Live Aid like every other couple months because fuck you. And I just saw all the people. There was obviously, it's Wembley, there's over 100,000 people there, and I was just like fucking baffled. Like, what the hell are you people doing all bunched up like that?
Yeah, man. Even like, I'm in the process of planning my wedding, and we are not having that many people at the wedding, but I'm looking at it and I'm like, wow, we're gonna have this many people? Like, this room, what do you mean this room can hold that many people? There's not enough space. We're gonna have to be all distanced out. And then I'm like, wait, my wedding is not for a while now. Yeah. So I'm hopeful that we are gonna be in a better situation as a society.
Well, see, but if I could find a date to the wedding, I don't have to go stag.
You got, hey, people who are listening, if you're an eligible lady, you could be Javier's date to the pod and meet both of us. What a cool experience that'll be for you coming to Canada.
Yeah, I'll start up a bidding war. You got to bid on it.
We just talk about the match.
Yeah, so, right, hand biting. AJ slams Paige face first into the announce table, and then Paige, you know, she returns the favor by, like, dropping AJ face first into the barricade.
Yeah, Paige was on the outside, and AJ was on the apron, and Paige managed to put her in electric chair position and then just face first onto the barricade, which... I can't say I've ever seen electric chair drop kind of like that. I thought it was great.
It was fun. I mean, it's an innovative spot that you could do because AJ is fucking tiny.
That's true. That's probably one thing that people appreciate about working with AJ is that, like, you can pull off any spot. Any strength spot that you wanted to run as a diva, you can do with AJ.
Yeah, she's so small. Like, yeah. So small. And, yeah, there's a really cool spot here where... So AJ's like in the ring, like kind of on the middle rope, and Paige is on the outside, kind of hanging on to the corner as well. And we get the cool little Mufasa scar spot, basically, where she like hits Paige's left hand, and Paige is just dangling. She's like, no, please, no. And then instead of just removing the other hand, she just stomps her ass out, and Paige falls.
Get out. Yeah, there are some. This match runs just a shade under 5 minutes, and there's a lot of weird spots in it.
They put a lot of work. It honestly worked so well because it's weird in a way that suits the story because it's such a weird story. They're both two weird women. They aren't divas. They want to tell a story.
Paige crawls on AJ at one point and pulls out a lock of hair. Whose hair is it? Because I couldn't tell.
It's Paige's. Okay. It's Paige's hair.
Okay, I was like, did you just take hair off of AJ's head?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Oh, also, after Paige fell to her death before getting run over by the Stampede, AJ hits a flying crossbody from the top to her, a la Ricky the Dragon Steamboat style, baby.
Yeah, there's a lot of just interesting spots in this match.
Yeah, there's a fun little spot that really tells, you know, calls back to the earlier in their storyline. Paige goes for the Paige Turner. AJ counters it, fucking contorts the shit out of her body in the process, twirls all over Paige, and it's just like, Black Widow.
I don't love the Paige Turner.
It was a terrible finish, which I'm glad that she changed it. We will get to that.
Yeah, I'm glad that she did. Before that was when AJ connected with a Shining Wizard, and it's the only time I've seen her hit one in these matches. And it was good. She should hit it more.
Good. It was the worst looking Shining Wizard I've seen.
I thought it was fine.
She straight up just comes off the rope and is just like, fuck, I have to hit this woman. And just like bends her leg.
I thought it looked like it actually hit her. And I like.
I feel like they had to change this kind of the camera angle on it just to make it look fine. It looked like shit.
I will say, one thing I noticed is, I don't know when Kevin Dunn decided that he wanted to just do camera cuts constantly, but doing this podcast in general, I think that the break is like 2006, 2007, 2008.
I think 2008 is really when it. I started noticing.
You can see it starting to change there, and it gets worse. It just gets worse the later it is.
It wasn't until like the Mark Henry episode, I think, that I really started to notice it because we started getting later on into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's cool. Eventually, though, for all the shit that we talked about, Paige and the Paige Turner, she pulls out the new finisher.
The Rampage.
Which I thought was just a great name.
It's such a great name.
Because for what it is, it's just a DDT. She contorts the shit out of AJ when she puts on a black, or she tries to put on a Black Widow.
Yeah.
And then she just spikes her straight down on her goddamn head. Yeah, it's Ram. She literally rams her head into the ground. And Rampage is a word. And her name is Paige. It's great.
Nothing I appreciate more than explaining the joke.
Because as we talked about earlier, there may be 5-year-olds that listen to this for some reason.
I hope not. So Paige picks up the W on her 22nd birthday and becomes a 2-time Divas champion. She's so good at such a young age here.
She, at this time, is a year younger than I currently am.
Yeah, and a lot younger than I currently am, so that hurts.
Also, Paige, I am free next Wednesday. That is Wednesday when I am free.
Paige's neck injury is such a shame. Because she really had so much more left to do, I think, in terms of wrestling. God.
Can you imagine if she had just gone full heel during Becky's rise to the top, when Becky was like top, you know, just a little program that they could have had together instead of me getting Lacey Evans.
Give me a Paige heel stable with like Nikki Cross in it.
And fucking Toni Storm.
Yeah, sold. I love that. I love all of that. But instead, you know, that unfortunate injury. And I still don't quite understand, because it sounds like she hasn't been cleared by WWE doctors, but is kind of cleared by other... I don't get the extent of the injury.
Honestly, like, I love Paige. I think she's great. I think she's kind of at the point where I know she doesn't really want to do anything else. I don't know what she's really qualified for in the world, because I don't know the woman. But, like... I think for health, like, it happens so early on for you, you just kind of take the back seat and try to transition to something else.
I will say that the Edge return does give me hope.
Yeah.
It might be false hope, but it does give me hope.
Yeah, I will say, though, I feel like it's kind of a extreme circumstance with Edge, though. He had so much time in between to just heal, and, you know, the way he was working on his body and everything, you know, it kind of, I mean, if we go on the same timeline with Paige, she retired at what, like 26?
Yeah, something like that.
And so, like, she'll be 36 when she comes back. Like, is it really worth it at that point for the run? I don't know. Who knows what wrestling's gonna look like at that point in time? Because, fuck, if you had told me 10 years ago during the Summer of Punk that wrestling was gonna look the way that it does now, I would have been like, sure.
Sure.
So who knows?
All Elite Wrestling, whatever that means.
Women being in prominent positions. Please.
John Cena's still going to be dominating the company. Oh, cool. Goldberg. Sorry. It makes me sad. Let's look at the final match, and that is AJ Lee teaming with Paige against the Bella Twins at WrestleMania 31. So AJ lost the title to Nikki Bella at Survivor Series after winning it back from Paige Night of Champions, and then she took time off to heal a neck injury. In the interim is when there was the beginning of hashtag Give Divas a Chance. AJ tweeted out in February 2015 that women's wrestlers were not getting the same opportunities, we're not getting the same wages, we're not getting the same...
Straight at Stephanie McMahon, by the way.
And she tweeted at Stephanie, and I think at Vince, too, which, like, when everything I know about Vince, he probably isn't checking his own Twitter, but also...
He doesn't know what it is.
He doesn't know what a Twitter is. But also, like, bull to go right to the top. I like that. And that really did start a conversation about the fact that women weren't being given the opportunities. It did lead to WWE reevaluating, I think, their women's division and the role in the product, because it led to call-ups of Charlotte and Becky and Sasha, the kind of...
Which didn't happen until July.
Which didn't happen until July. That there were still some weeks where they would get, like, a 10-minute match in a couple of the segments, or two women's matches on the show instead of just one. But then they'd go back and have like a 2-minute match one week, and that was the only thing on the show. It very much reminds me in a similar, not exactly the same way, but in the way that for the first year AEW has struggled to find consistent roles and time for their women's division.
Although obviously, now we're having a title eliminator tournament,
which sounds excellent,
and with Emi Sakura.
I think AEW is doing a good job of highlighting different stories, but they really need to dig into the characters of the women on their roster. Yeah. WWE at this time was just not, didn't know how to use women yet. They were like, what do you mean they're not just like a bathroom break? Which is a shitty opinion to have, but they really didn't know, like, well, what do we do? And it took, I think, some prominent voices. Obviously, we don't know who, but we hear stories of people like Stephanie and like Triple H and Fit Finlay. It's apparently one of the big ones
because
he was like one of the main agents for them. Just give them time. They just kept saying, like, give them time. Let them go out and do 10 minutes. Let them go out
and obviously, Triple H was, I mean, you could see that he was a big proponent of it because you see what was going on literally at this time in NXT. The top people in NXT. Like, obviously, the whole Sami Zayn, Neville storyline was great, but really, I thought the main attraction of NXT at the time was the women. It was the Charlottes, the Sasha Banks, the Becky, the Baileys. You know, that whole storyline. Fuck, even Summer Rae was good in NXT. Like,
that's true.
You know, it's so interesting to think of just the way that they really were at the two parallels, because you had such talented women down in NXT and a lot of potential in the main roster, because you still had AJ Lee, you still had Paige. Nikki Bella was really actually starting to become good at wrestling at this point, and she's about to embark on her run that we talk about here. She's like in the thick of it.
Yeah.
It's just really disappointing that they were presented in two different lights, because it's all a matter of how you present things, I feel like, you know? If someone isn't as talented, you know, I don't think the Bella twins are as talented as the women down in NXT in the ring, but it's all a matter of presentation. If you're presenting them as just the reality TV people that are going to go out there for 3 minutes to somewhat pop the women into the crowd, like, oh, I saw them on E! Network, and then, like, just treat them as little trophies, then, yeah, they're going to be thought of as shit. But if they're going out there and you give the Bella Twins like an opponent like Paige and, you know, AJ Lee and actual good wrestlers, and let them have a 10-minute match, just fuck it. If they fuck up, they fuck up. But, like, it's Raw. No one gives a shit.
We forget what happens on Raw next week. You have to remind us 74 times with recaps. So, like, we'll get over it. But some things I think people forget is that wrestling is, they decide everything that's going to happen early on. If you want to do a 20-minute women's match, you can. You have the talent. You have the women who can do it. If you want to give them four different segments on the show, two matches, two promos, you can. You can write that all in. Like, there was nothing stopping them except for their preconceived notions of what the women's wrestlers were supposed to be, which is shit. Yeah. And I'm really glad that it's not fixed, but it's better. It's obviously better, and it can continue to get better.
And not to give AEW a pass, because it's kind of been inexcusable what they've done with their women's division, but they haven't had a lot of their talent because the Joshi wrestlers obviously haven't been able to come over from Japan.
Yeah.
And they've at least acknowledged that it is a flaw of theirs, and they're taking accountability for it. I don't see it becoming better within the last couple weeks and months, but at least, you know, hopefully this title eliminator will be a change that they can have there, and maybe start moving forward. Maybe give Sheeta a couple of opponents, but it's the same issue that WWE has, where we can't just present the women who are in the title picture as like the only women. You know,
there need to be secondary feuds. There need to be feuds that are not about friendships.
There was a really fun storyline. Remember the Big Swole Britt Baker storyline?
Yeah.
That was fun.
That was good.
And it lasted a while before their big match. Like, give me more of that. Just give us storylines that have nothing to do with the title, just to display the women. Just,
you know what?
Show
me
them.
Whose storylines I like right now? Billie Kay. I like that Billie Kay is on my TV screen every Friday, trying to find a spot on the roster, trying to, like, give people a resume. She's trying out to be the assistant to Adam Pearce. Now she's with the Riot Squad. Like, she's showcasing. We all knew Billie Kay is very funny, right? So just give them the opportunity to do something. I knew that Give Divas a Chance was going to bring up strong feelings for both of us, because both of us are big, like, why the hell are you not using the talent?
Big proponent of the women.
Yeah, they're good at the freaking wrestling. Anyways.
I mean, just think about it now, the parallels between Raw and SmackDown. It's insane.
Yeah. So AJ did come back from being out for a while because she was healing.
Surprise return.
On March 2nd, and she saved Paige from an attack from the Bellas, which caused this match to be booked.
I was watching that live.
Is the one out in the San Francisco Bay Area, and the one that's pretty much almost entirely in the light because of the start time. Like, it started at like 3 in the afternoon.
I mean, to be fair, it's kind of like, what are they going to do? Postpone it to like 5 and then have WrestleMania finish at 2 in the morning? Like,
I will Eastern say time? It was weird as hell to see an Undertaker Bray Wyatt match in the daytime.
Yeah, it was, that was weird.
Unsettling.
But at the same time, like, you can't push it any further back because, like, even the main event was half of it was in the light, kind of. So, like,
it was in the twilight, yeah. Just a weird, aura. It's a good WrestleMania. I don't
mind it. Fucking excellent. I love 31. It was my first WrestleMania back as a full-time fan, and, you know, I loved everything about it. It really was great. But this match was weird to me because, I came back and I was really, you know, when I came back as a fan, I was really looking forward to seeing what the women could do because the women were a big part of my fandom early on. I mean, obviously, it was presented in a weird way. I was a horny little kid, and I really liked Trish Stratus for obvious reasons.
I love that, like, you still can't pronounce her name.
Shut the fuck up. But like, yeah, I really liked, you know, seeing those matches still, you know, of Michelle McCool. I just liked seeing them. They were very attractive, yes, but at the same time, it was also something different.
Yeah.
And I, you know, different is good. So I came back and hoping, you know, that the women would have longer and better matches, and I didn't really get that. So that was disappointing. It also didn't help that I came back as a wrestling fan literally the same show that AJ was leaving, because it wasn't until Survivor Series 2014 that I started coming back into the fold. You know, it was probably like 2 weeks before the actual pay-per-view itself, and I was really intrigued by AJ. So for her to just fucking disappear 2 weeks after I came back to wrestling kind of sucked.
Yeah.
And I got stuck with the Bella Twins, which is fine. I had a lot of disdain for them early on, but they grew on me, I guess. And this match was weird.
I will say that in this match, the person who impressed me the most in terms of, like, my expectation versus where they performed is Nikki.
Yeah.
In this match, Nikki has a lot of really good spots, including an early Alabama Slam. I know she hits it consistently, but that Alabama Slam is, I think you don't think of Nikki as a power wrestler.
And the Alabama Slam is, though, is the weird thing.
Yeah, you don't think of her that way, because I don't know if it's that she's not, you know, as, like, muscular as some of the other women's wrestlers you would associate as, like, a powerhouse, but she can hit a lot of strong moves. The rack attack takes some strength.
Yeah, I mean, you think about her offense, it's not holds, it's not headlocks and stuff like that. She's a striker, she slams people, it's kind of a weird combo of strength and brawling, but you don't really think about her that way because of the way that she was presented, which was the reality star person who you just expect to go out there and do kind of shit moves. But they were never shit. They were crisp, usually.
Let's talk about the presentation of AJ in this match, because she got the short end of the stick, especially early on.
Okay, so, like, if you think about it, it's kind of a combination of a lot of things. It's, you know, the three things that obviously stick out to my mind is, number one, this is her last match. So
no,
you don't know.
No, it is not.
It is not?
It is her second last match.
What was her last match?
There was a 6-woman tag the next night on Raw. That was AJ's last match.
Okay, well, I mean, I doubt she really does as much in that match either. But, like, you think about the presentation, which, like, yeah, it's her last big match. Sorry, it's not her last match. But, you know, we are a year removed from her husband going fucking scorched earth on the company.
Correct.
Which... they are married at this point, if you know anything about the whole saga. They are 7-8 months removed from getting his release papers on their wedding day.
On their wedding day.
I assume there are some sour grapes between her and the company. Also, she just called them out like 2 months ago.
I will have sour grapes if I get fired on my wedding day.
Yeah, and...
Javier's going to send me walking papers from this podcast on my wedding day.
Like, final note, that is actually really important when you got to think about it. She just came back from a neck injury.
Yeah,
She was just on the table. Like, how much could she actually do is also, like, something that really needs to be questioned here.
So early on, she is out of the match for a long time. Early on, she is knocked off the apron by Nikki.
And
she's down for a long time. She's about to start getting back up, but Bree's in the match now, and she hits Bree Moan. And she knees AJ in the head when she's up on the apron. Like, AJ was just crawling back on the apron. She gets a knee in the head, so she's down once more. AJ gets back up a third time and gets drop kicked off by Nikki. Like, AJ's out for a real long time. And Nikki and Bree are both dominating Paige. Big spine buster by Nikki. The rack attack, like I mentioned.
Yeah, and Paige just kicks out like normal. What the fuck is this? Fucking ROH?
Paige kicks out of the rack attack, which is the finisher of the Divas Champion at that point. That's
pretty
wild.
Yeah, it's not like there was a delay or anything. She went straight for the pin. Paige kicks out.
Yeah. Paige then starts to get a little bit of shine, a little bit of fire. She elbows Brie in the corner, tosses Nikki to the outside, hits a really nice senton off the apron. I like that. I don't see Paige do things like that often.
No, she's not really a high spot kind of competitor. She was also one of those that was really about the slamming. She talked a lot of shit during a match. She really felt like a lot of what she was like female Kevin Owens, I would say.
That's a good
as far as the way she conducted herself in the ring. She just talked a lot of shit and she just did moves.
Paige does get the hot tag to AJ. AJ comes in with forearms and a Thez press and then a really interesting tornado DDT that was actually a tornado guillotine. Because she tornadoes, I don't remember if it was Brie or Nikki.
Nikki.
It was Nikki. And instead of landing and DDTing her, AJ goes and lands on the apron, which guillotines Nikki on the top rope.
Yeah.
That was cool. I've never seen that
before. And then she hits a crossbody. Nikki rolled through it. But as she has, she picks up AJ, puts her on her shoulders. And as that's happening, Paige comes in and fucking super kicks her head off.
Yes. Paige decides to clean kick her. You know, soccer kick into next week.
It was a near fall. AJ gets put in kind of an electric chair position. It's not like your regular. She's sitting on your shoulder. She kind of has her knees on Nikki's shoulders, but it's in the electric chair kind of position, which she just contorts around somehow and turns into a tornado DDT. I don't know how.
It didn't connect cleanly, but it was really cool for what you did.
Yeah, it was good enough. You know, it's that's one of those moves where, like, unless you're fucking Rey Fénix and Sami Zayn, and those are the only two probably that could combine to do that move really clean, you're probably not going to get it as crisp.
AJ hits the Black Widow, or locks in the Black Widow. Brie breaks it up with a kick, and then Paige
immediately
again Paige with a massive kick. Paige is just kicking people this match,
and then she fucking just carelessly throws that woman into the steps.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, on the outside, Paige absolutely launches Brie into the steel steps.
Like, there was no working that. She went flying into those
shins. It was bad. And then that allows AJ to lock in the Black Widow on Nikki for the W. So in the last big match of AJ's career, she is a winner alongside Paige.
Still waiting for that Divas title shot.
That's true. Somewhere
never
down
got long. A rematch and never was able to, you know, follow up on that tap.
Now, after retiring, Nikki Bella, who is still a Divas Champion at this time, would go on to break AJ's longest reigning Divas Championship reign by a whole 6 days.
Because we
I'm sure it had
AJ.
Nothing to do with the friction between WWE and AJ's real life husband, CM Punk. I'm sure that
who,
had nothing
you know,
to do
may
with
or may not have had a lawsuit going at the time.
Mm-hmm. WWE, not subtle, not petty.
Not
just kidding. They're very fucking petty.
She lost the title to Charlotte Flair, and then we get the women's era started. Because a couple months after that, WrestleMania 32, we obviously get that really fun triple threat, and it's kind of just been an uphill climb ever since.
And that was one of the only good matches in WrestleMania 32.
It was the best match, in my opinion, of WrestleMania 32.
Agreed. Hey, we once rebooked WrestleMania 32. You should go back and listen to that.
Yeah, it was great, and mine won.
There's an old plug for you. Oh, now that we've reviewed the whole career of AJ Lee, Javier, what are your thoughts on the impact of AJ on the wrestling world?
Honestly, I think when I first think about AJ Lee, I don't even think about her as a wrestler. I think about, you know, what she's done for as a mental health advocate.
True.
She's been so prominent in that role, in that position. She's taken a lot of her time to really talk about her struggles and the struggles of people like her, and, you know, really tried to put mental health in the forefront. And, you know, her book, Crazy Is My Superpower, I fucking love that book. I have the audio version of it. I've listened to it 3 or 4 times at this point. It's really insightful, not only about her life, but just, you know, her struggles mentally and how it's affected her and how it, you know, the stigma around it is really something that should change. And it's just really cool because, you know, I see her and I think about, you know, her and her relationship with CM Punk and, like, dude, they're fucking perfect for each other. Like, it's kind of crazy. And, you know, it's really cool to see what she's done with her career post-wrestling. Obviously, I mentioned the comic book stuff earlier, but she's really shifted her life into writing because she's just done with wrestling at this point. It's really obvious that kind of, like, her passion for it was kind of sucked out in the same way that Punk's was. Yeah. Which sucks.
And I think it had something to do also with what Punk was going through, the being fired, the lawsuit, all that. I think had something to do with it. I think the thing for me when it comes to AJ Lee is the ability to translate your real life character to your character on screen is something that I don't think WWE really let women's wrestlers do often. Is like their quirks and their personality is something that was kind of like paved over. The exception to the rule, in my opinion, is Lita, which we already compared to AJ to a little bit earlier.
Lita was always fucking crazy, people.
Lita was just doing Lita stuff, right? But AJ showed that like you can have these dimensions to a character and still play them face or heel. Like they're not going to really put you in a box. And you look at the women who are really successful now, I think a lot of them are, again, turning their own personalities up to 11. I think Sasha's like that. I think Becky's like the man. Like, I think Lacey Evans is her whole life story is what she is now, right?
Yeah, I just want to say this, and I do not mean any insult when I say this. Sasha Banks just is that bitch.
Yeah, she is the coolest motherfucker on the planet.
Yeah, she's fucking awesome. But same AJ thing with Becky.
AJ was the kind of the innovator. Like, she was the first one to be like, she's bringing in these nerd culture things. She was unapologetically herself, even if she then had to play a character with it. Like, there were still elements of truth in who she was. And you see that in, like, you know, she didn't want to be the total diva. That's not who she is. And that's why I think that, you know, Pipe Bombshell promo just lands so well, is because it feels very authentic.
Yeah, and it sucks that her career had to end a year before we really got the whole...
The women's division became a thing?
Yeah, it was a women's division. We got all this fresh talent in. Like, again, can you just imagine her having a match with Becky, Sasha, you know, Charlotte? We saw how great a chemistry Charlotte and Sasha have. Can you imagine the same kind of vein of match between Charlotte and AJ, you know? Paige, he could have done a little more with those two. Asuka.
I think those two could have been, you know, lifelong rivals. They could have had a great just back and forth.
They could have been Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins.
We're going to do this forever, yeah.
And eventually our daughters will be doing it together.
That's true. So that's going to wrap up this week's podcast. Before we go and plug the socials, I'm going to plug a new project. I got new things on the go.
Oh, yeah.
How exciting. I am starting a new podcast with my best friend Mallory, and it is a pop culture podcast. We're going to be looking at pop culture from the week that was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and then predicting what's going to happen 10 years in the future. It's called the Pop Capsule Podcast because it's like a time capsule for pop culture. Guys, I'm very punny. But
he really
release
is.
Release date for that is going to be sometime in February. Check out my Twitter for more details. My Twitter is at @itsevangomes, @itsevangomes. Also, follow the podcast on Twitter at @crossbodyofwork. And Javier, where can people find you on Twitter?
I am at @jmellosports. Catch me begging Evan on a nearly weekly basis to let me on that podcast to talk about One Tree Hill. And also, when he's talking about 20 years before that, I was not alive, so I don't want to be on that episode. But hey, I'll probably learn more. But One Tree Hill, I'm your expert, everybody. I don't tweet about it on the Twitter account. I probably won't now, just because.
You gotta get a One Tree Hill burner account.
Who says I don't already have one?
Next week, it is our last solo episode before we dive into another three-parter. And next week, we are looking at the early career of Lex Luger. Now, I think people associate Lex Luger with the Lex Express and kind of not being Hogan, which, you know, not being Hogan normally, great thing. But not being Hogan in the way of wanting to be the top star for WWF and then really falling off in terms of his production in WCW. All of our matches... Our last match recovering from Lex Luger is the Yokozuna match. Everything is his early stuff when he was apparently like the next big thing and was really nailing his gimmick. So I'm excited because I don't know anything about old Lex Luger. I only saw like WCW, not like Nitro debut and beyond Luger, really.
Yeah, Mall of America debut and all that jazz.
That first episode of Nitro is actually pretty decent.
I've never seen it. I don't WCW, but you know... If you
Hulk
convince
Hogan
me hard
is shilling Pasta Mania, and there's a really good Jushin Liger Brian Pillman match.
Oh, I've signed me up.
Yep, it's pretty decent. But next week we're going to be looking at Lex Luger, and I'm excited to watch his old stuff.
Yeah, I'm excited for that one as well. I guess now that you mention it in that capacity, I saw Lex Luger on the thing, and I was like, oh, fuck.
sometimes you got to do what you got to do. And I know there's people who probably grew up watching Lex Luger who listen to the podcast, and, you know, we hope to relive the glory days for you.
Yeah, I guess. I'll try not to critique him too hard, just for the people.
We absolutely will, but that's just part of our charm.
This is true. I'm sorry. I don't mean to disparage your childhood heroes. I just hate them.
Unless your childhood hero is Hulk Hogan. Javier, any last words for the people?
Black Lives Matter, and keep fighting. Good fight, everybody.
See you next week.